all of our meetings on time, as we've always tried to do, and with respect to those people who are here on time, let's do that. I'm going to delay the introductions. We do have some new staff members that I think members ought to have a chance to meet, and they ought to have a chance to meet members as well. Our topic today is sort of brought about, and I suspect that maybe other members have had this occasion too, of visiting with people in nursing home, home care, and other long-term care industries who've been telling some pretty terrible horror stories about what's happening to their liability insurance. And we may very well hear this, but just I just got a copy, and I see my good friends from Sewardville managed to make it up the highway, so they'll tell their own story. But I think this is sort of an example of what has been seen over the years. They gave me 4 years of total liability insurance coverage. In the 2000-2001 year, their total insurance bill was $10,921. That jumped in the next year to $22,427, a 51% increase. And I'm just going to skip. Remember now, $10,921 in the 2000-2001 year. In 2003-2004, for the same coverage, we're talking about $107,231. And this is not at all unusual what we've seen in the marketplace. So what we're going to try to do today, I think, is get probably a little amplification of this example in each of those industries. And then I've asked for a discussion about what are some of the recommendations that might be made, too. I think we need to be problem solvers, not just problem identifiers. So we will spend some time as well. We are going to have someone here who can sort of help us understand the insurance market. It's a little hard to find the actual liability carriers because I don't know if there are any in Minnesota that provide business anymore, but it's most of them are out of state. But I think we'll at least get a handle a bit on it. So we'll proceed with that. I think our first group is representing the long-term care imperative, and I think, John Houston, you had a group, so I believe our chairs are all set, and if the group will introduce themselves, and we'll just ask you to proceed. Good morning. Welcome to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. Do I need to say come on down, or how do we do this? Good morning.
Maybe I'll. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Husted, and we're looking for our final witness here. Might have just stepped out for a brief minute, but John Lips will find him. And while we wait, maybe we can go with other introductions here.
I think you're made whole right now.
Oh, great, sir. So maybe we'll start with that end and go this way for introductions.
Okay. Good morning. I'm John Lips, Director of Legal Affairs for Care Providers of Minnesota, here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative.
Good morning. My name is Michael Platt. I'm with the Lutheran Home Association in Belle Plaine.
My name is Howard Groff. I'm president of Fieldwood Care Centers.
My name is Ed Bates. I'm the director of sales and development for the insurance services with Care Providers of Minnesota.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just want to make reference to a packet of information that was provided by us. It has the front cover is long-term care imperative. It starts with our basic position paper, one-page statement of the issue. And then it has a series of data charts that you can look at as background. I do want to call your attention to the first chart because it does state some dramatic figures about the per-bed premium expense increases for liability insurance. It looks pretty dramatic with that $400 since 1999, but it actually understates the case. And Ed Bates, who's in the insurance field and is kind of an expert in these matters, I'd like him to comment just briefly about why this really is understated. This is a result of surveys of our members.
Mr. Bates.
Mr. Chair, there are These numbers, and I don't want to make this an insurance class, but these numbers are reflective or understated for a number of reasons. One, we've all moved from an occurrence policy to a claims-made policy. In its simplest terms, that means that the insurance company, at the moment the insurance is in force, is taking on less exposure. So they charge you, of their rate that they normally charge per bed, they charge you a percentage of that rate over the first 5 years. The first year it might be 25 or 35% of what the actual rate would be, and that graduates over the first 5 years to the full rate. What's being reported right now is some percentage of a rate that you're going to pay in the future, regardless of claims, regardless of what the industry happens. So for example, if you're paying 35% this year, next year you're going to pay 60% of that rate. So these are going to increase on the reported basis. Secondly, there's a little bit of a phenomenon with one of the insurance companies. Guide One provided insurance for a vast majority of the industry 4 or 5 years ago. They virtually pulled out of the for-profit facilities that provide services, stayed on the not-for-profit facilities that were very good risks to stay on. And they are under the market in their pricing. So that does lower the averages that you're looking at. And then finally, the MJUA has played a significant role in being a safe harbor for the industry. Their rate is, including their reserve fund, is $612. The next rate that we would see, certainly for the for-profit facilities, would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000 per bed. Each of those elements reduce these averages that you're seeing on the chart.
And Mr. Payne, how many would that mean that with that claims made that it takes maybe 5 years or so before that will sort of equalize itself?
Exactly. 5 years is the point at which you're paying the full mature rate.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Please proceed.
All right. With that, and we will be happy to answer any other questions about the data as we go along, but I'd like to turn over to Mike Klatt first to provide some testimony.
Mr. Klatt.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Again, my name is Michael Klatt, and I serve as president of Lutheran Home Association in Belle Plaine. We provide services to the elderly and persons with developmental disabilities in Minnesota and Wisconsin through nursing homes, assisted living residences, independent housing, community-based services, and intermediate care facilities for persons with developmental disabilities. As many are well aware, the liability insurance crisis is reaching across many healthcare disciplines. While much of the national focus has been on physicians, the crisis of affordable liability insurance has reached every corner of our state. It has become especially burdensome for older adult services providers. Last year, our liability insurance carrier raised our premiums from $35,000 annually to $180,000, over a 500% increase in 1 year. The insurance firm based their decisions on the rapidly growing claim environment in nursing homes throughout the United States. The troubling aspect in this rate increase for our organization was that after 30 years of doing business with this firm, we never had a claim. A few months later, this company elected to stop providing liability insurance, a decision that impacted over 200 facilities across the United States. When faced with these kinds of increases, our options are very limited. We do not have an option to raise our rates to increase our revenues. While we were able to find another carrier to insure us, it is my fear that some providers in the future will go bare and not provide liability insurance, rather than making cuts to staff or other critical needs. In addition, another firm which provides a significant amount of workers' compensation insurance in this state through one of its divisions was recently closed due to the parent firm being underfunded in its liability insurance reserves by over $70 million. It is also my understanding that a few programs serving persons with developmental disabilities may be going without liability insurance. With even one claim, they have found it too expensive to maintain. We believe that liability insurance is an important component to our operations. Mistakes can and do happen. We also do not have the ability to simply opt out of liability insurance. In doing so, this would create a financial crisis with the institutions that provide resources to us. It is also my understanding that liability insurance carriers look at two key elements when making their contractual decisions. This includes Department of Health surveys and organizational financial statements. Our survey results were respectable. However, the increasingly complicated survey process, which began this past summer, will only increase the likelihood of even steeper premium increases. I did have a discussion with our broker about this, and he described that any time an organization gets a level G deficiency or higher in a nursing home, that they can anticipate that their in premiums can go up 2 to 3 times based on that incident. With respect to financial statements, it is no secret through the long-term care reform efforts that the financial strengths of many nursing homes in this state are generally weak or highly leveraged. Thus, we have a cycle of increasing premiums with little or flat rate increases to fund them. This hurts our financial standing, which in turn affects our premiums. Add to that the increase in regulatory scrutiny, which drives up premiums, and you get the situation where we are now facing dramatic premium increases with no way to control the increases or to pay for them. Due to the serious budget shortfalls this past year, nursing home rates were frozen and many other health and human service programs received cuts. However, no additional resources were available for widespread increases in liability insurance. We believe as an organization that we must maintain good stewardship principles of the government funding and charitable contributions we receive. However, we cannot absorb the escalating costs of liability insurance. Paying these out-of-control premium increases violates those principles. While many emotions can be felt in the liability insurance crisis, we respectfully ask that relief be directed to the provider community. We wish to devote our time, energy, and resources to the residents, families, and communities who depend on us to fulfill this important mission. We in the provider community hold your confidence as a great trust. And as one of those providers, I thank you for the opportunity to be present with you today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Klatt, when you each year go out to seek someone to carry the insurance for you, what kind of situation do you get in terms of people bidding for your business?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, up until last year, we really had a good relationship and never really had to really work on the bidding process. It's been a new experience, and we really only had 3 quotes this past year. And I mentioned earlier about the change in the claims paid basis versus the experience before is a shift, which has been a new experience. We really only had 3 choices, and of the 3, only one was even in the area where we could afford.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Hi, my name is Howard Goff. I'm president of Fieldwood Care Centers. We operate 20 nursing homes and 16 senior housing projects, assisted living, independent living, SLS, ICFMR facilities in 4 states. Of those, 8 of the nursing homes are in Minnesota and 10 of the senior housing projects are in Minnesota, just to give you a perspective. What I'd like to share with you this morning is our experience over from 1998 to 2003 and what's happened in the medical liability market. From the inception of our organization in 1989, we were covered by St. Paul companies through the year 2001. In 2000, St. Paul companies approached us and said they were getting out of the medical liability market and that we would have to go find coverage elsewhere. They came back to us and said, we kind of were kidding, but because you're such a good client, we're actually going to write you and a few other folks for 1 more year. At the same time, what they did is, as Mr. Bates testified, they changed from an occurrence to a claims-made policy. Now, what this brought us at the end of the time that they discontinued writing us is we were forced to buy what's called a tail policy. That's so that you can go back and make sure your coverage for the year you already paid premiums is still in place. That premium cost our organization for these facilities about $80,000. In 2002, we moved to Royal and Sun Alliance, who was one of the few remaining AAA best-rated insurance companies writing liability insurance. In the eighth month of our premium, they came to us and said, oh, by the way, we're getting out of this business. We can no longer afford to write medical liability insurance in this country. Currently, we are with CNA. Chairman, you asked how many people stepped to the plate. The only AAA-rated organization that would write for a tax-paying entity, we're for-profit, was CNA, and that we were able to secure coverage with them. The interesting thing about them is they basically cherry-pick. Mr. Klatt testified, they take a very, very serious look at your regulatory history, and based on that, they determine whether or not they'll even write you. As I mentioned, as we move through this, the coverage is also just to give you perspective. In 1998, the coverage per occurrence was $1 million with a $6 million umbrella and a $5,000 deductible. Fast forward to 2003, we now have $1 million coverage per occurrence. They will only write an umbrella up to $3 million, and the deductible is now $50,000, which we either have to set that money aside in the bank, or we have to secure a letter of credit to make sure that we're creditworthy to do that. I mention all of this, and keep in mind, during that in the same time period, we had no claims that were filed related to medical liability insurance. Now, let me just give you a little perspective on the cost, and I'm going to do this on a per-bed basis so that we can kind of keep it in a better perspective. In 1998, for both the umbrella and the medical liability policy, our organization paid an average of $89.25. I fast forward that to 2003. That premium for less coverage, higher deductible, is now $831.17. Essentially, we have gone up just about tenfold. And again, I would reiterate, we have had no claims in that time period. As Mr. Klatt pointed out, with the rate freezes that were caused by the budget shortfall, we've been forced to freeze rates for our employees. We have had to revise paid time off benefits. We've had to revisit contributions to health insurance premiums, and finally had sought concessions from union folks. I'd also like to bring you the national perspective on some of these things. I am very active in the American Healthcare Association, which is care providers' affiliate on the national level, serving on their medical liability subcommittee. I look at this as a pebble in the water analogy. The pebble dropped in Florida, and they saw a huge increase in liability. Even though we're not having any claims, basically in the entire northern tier, this is not unique to Minnesota, Wisconsin, South Dakota. Some of the upper eastern states have the same thing. We are now paying for those claims that were settled in the southeast. Premium costs in those states is, if you can get coverage, is running in the $2,000 per bed area. So you can see it's going up dramatically. One of the options is facilities are choosing to go bare. There was an article last week in Wall Street Journal focusing on the state of Arkansas, which has seen a huge liability upshot, that of the 237 nursing facilities in that state, 100 are going bare. We look at this as a liability lottery. 80% of the claims being filed in the country right now are being settled. Average settlement is about $50,000. So you're actually better off to put grandma in a nursing home right now, have some incident occur, sue for it, than it is to go buy a lottery ticket and try and win it that way. Last thing I would mention, the interesting thing that's happening nationally too is all of the facilities that are running bare, and when I say running bare, they have no medical liability coverage. They put a plaque on the front door and say, by the way, you can bring your loved one in here. Just don't expect to get anything if you sue us, because we don't have any coverage. To my knowledge, it was updated as of last week, no facility running without insurance has been sued by the trial lawyers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. President Huntley?
Mr. Chair and any of the witnesses, I would like to be furnished with the total number of claims that have been paid out in the state of Minnesota for whatever years. And twice now I've heard some comment about the for-profit institutions having a different insurance setup than the not-for-profits, and I'd like to know what the reason that is.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, we will get some data on the total number of claims. I know that talking to, for example, Representative Coles, who happens to be a trial lawyer and sometimes defends these cases, there may not be, the data we have may not reflect the actual activity out there. There are a lot of settlements. In fact, that's how most of these things happen. And some of that may not be available to us because of a confidentiality. But we will try to document to the extent we can the number of claims in Minnesota and get that to you. And maybe Ed, or I don't know if anybody else would like to comment on question number two.
Mr. Chair, committee members, there is some interesting loss data available. St. Paul, which was the largest professional liability insurer for long-term care in the country, provided the JUA 5 years of loss data at the outset of their involvement with long-term care, and that's available. We've looked at it. Minnesota is eighth out of 50 states and the lowest claims paid. To answer your question specifically, it is a very hard task to collect all the claims that were paid under professional liability in the state of Minnesota. But there are various sources that help. The MGAUA is also currently collecting loss data and ensuring an ever-growing number, and that's going to be very valuable to look at. With reference to for-profit and not-for-profit, the insurance claims data that has been collected by insurers has shown, for whatever reason, that not-for-profit facilities have less professional liability claim settlements than for-profit. Nothing has been provided beyond that, but that is a statistical collection and valid.
Representative Lutley.
Mr. Chair and anybody out there, we have this sheet here from the Stuartville Care Center, and they've broken it down by commercial property coverage premium, commercial general liability, and commercial umbrella liability. And is the commercial property one related, is that premium related to malpractice, or is it simply the building?
Mr. Chair, no, they're totally separate coverages and they're totally separately underwritten based on their experience. Property insurance historically has been very affordable.
Well, what we have here, Mr. Chair, from Smithville is that commercial property coverage has gone up close to 100 or 10 times like the liability insurance. So it seems to me that it's not directly related to liability. It's related to the insurance market.
And maybe I don't know if you have a copy
maybe
of it.
Maybe we're paying for 9/11.
I passed that out separately, and if you'd like to see it, certainly welcome to.
Yeah, just to add that the coverages are oftentimes quoted on a package basis, which is your property and liability coverages together. It only has been recent that we've purchased these coverages from different insurance carriers and have only recently been split apart. So the data could be skewed somewhat on that, but property coverage is still available for long-term care at affordable rates.
Mr. Baird, you know, I certainly don't have any broad-based scientific basis for it, but I think even in neighborhood gatherings, people talk about their property insurance and what's happened in the most recent years. And I don't mean this, and I think we have the story where people here, but I'm assuming that this has got nothing to do with liability. This is strictly, that first line is strictly the property insurance, correct? Okay, I see it. The nodding to the affirmative on that. Which at least in this instance, I don't know what affordable means for sure. Maybe it's easier to get it, but it looks like it's, as Representative Huntley pointed out, exploding as well. All right. You've had a chance to take a look, I guess. I don't know if there's any other comment anybody else, but I think you're your opinion seemed to be that the property side of it has remained fairly affordable. This is obviously an isolated example, but it's not isolated from the kind of comments that I hear. And I guess I see another head shaking here. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, it depends on a number of factors. When you have to buy property, for example, if I were to provide a facility, their liability insurance through the MJUA, they only provide general and professional liability. I then have to go out and buy property insurance. The property insurance, in doing it that way, is called monoline. You run into certain challenges at that point where a facility might be a frame structure and not sprinklered, and then prices are higher. And so you run into different challenges where before, when it was a package, liability and property, some of the idiosyncrasies of the property itself were overlooked. But we're still finding under normal circumstances when we have non-combustible buildings and long-term care and we have to go to different property sources, I won't say that they haven't gone up over the course of the last 5 years. But proportionately compared to the professional liability is a much smaller percentage.
Mr. Ruff, you had a comment?
Commissioner Bradley, I would just like to comment on the Stewartville. I think this is quite typical since 9/11. I heard Mr. Huntley reference 9/11. Since 9/11, we have seen property coverage costs go up dramatically. And again, we're seeing the same type of changes in deductibles as well. So coverage tends to be decreasing while premiums are going up.
Thank you. Let's proceed.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Samuelson.
Thank you. Mr. Goff, have you looked at any type of insurance, self-insurance type models within your corporation or within a group of nursing homes?
Mr. Goff?
Yes, we have, ma'am. Two ways. One is there's offshore coverage that we did look at very, very closely. The downside to that is you basically have to front finance those kind of opportunities. And at the same time, care providers right now will be meeting with Unitaire, which is a group out of the South that has done some insurance, bringing groups together and funding it that way through a stock ownership versus offshore insurance company. And we will be holding meetings in the next month to do that.
Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say I think that's probably a wise thing to do right now and really take a look at what else is out there.
If I may comment.
Mr. Brown.
The problem you have with that, ma'am, is right now, last week, HUD put out a document saying that they're going to have minimum coverages within the 232 program, which is for assisted living. And and what they're requiring is it has to be a AAA best rated organization to write, and they have certain coverage levels in there. So it may indeed ultimately not become an alternative for us to secure the proper coverage for financing instruments that are in place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for holding this hearing. This is obviously a very important issue to us and all the other folks here, so thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
I have one.
Oh, Representative Fremda? I'm sorry, just a second, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably looking at Mr. Klatt, you mentioned surveys, and I'm going to paraphrase. That they're becoming more difficult and you're getting more deficiencies. And then in the next line, you talk about when you get to a level G, your premiums almost automatically increase. Can you talk a little bit about that piece of surveys and maybe there's something there that we can do? I'm looking at what we can do legislatively in that whole process because of
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it's an excellent question. We've really had respectable surveys, but there are a number of facilities in the state, especially the last 5-6 months, that have experienced a sharp increase in number of deficiencies per survey, and the statistics are bearing that out. What exactly is the cause of that? I really don't know at this point in time. We ourselves haven't felt that. I'm obviously concerned about that, and and it is a concern and an issue, and Minnesota isn't the only state that has that issue. There are states where we operate in Wisconsin as well. Similar issues like that arise, inconsistency in regions in the state, which raises questions as well. The information about increases in premiums is, as Mr. Graf testified, the agencies that are providing liability insurance are very, very selective, and they're looking at areas that they can easily measure from one facility to another. And a survey does that. Each of us has a survey, so they can compare from one to another. And based on that information, they can really statistically associate costs, if you will, in premiums. And what we're seeing is that if you have a survey that has a level G or higher, you are at high risk for having your premiums increase. And that was validated by a discussion with our broker where he said that, as in their experience in working with insurance companies, is that for sure at least 1 to 2 times and up as 2 to 3 times higher in their premiums following a survey that will have a G deficiency or higher, which is a concern because of, again, back to the inconsistencies that we've seen in the surveys out there. Thank you.
Mr. Huntley?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Klatt, you've brought up a little sore point with me. Have you noticed a difference in regions within the state in the survey teams that the Department of Health has used in various areas of the state having what you think are different?
Mr. Platt?
More tough results in some state or some regions than in others?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it is a concern in the regions here in the state, although it appears there's a leveling off here in Minnesota, except it's leveling off higher in the regions, and there is a concern out there. I can express my own feelings in Wisconsin, where in southeastern Wisconsin, Milwaukee area, it's very low areas, and in northwestern Wisconsin, where we have two locations, it's 2 to 3 times higher in numbers of deficiencies. There are some areas in Minnesota. We're located in Belle Plaine in Caledonia, Minnesota. We haven't really experienced that regional effect, but I know of many of my peers who feel that and feel there's validation for that. And I understand your frustration that you've expressed.
I believe Representative Chairman Boudreau is going to be holding a hearing on the subject of surveys. That's correct.
Thank you.
Did you have something to that subject?
No, I just wanted to mention that the policy committee will be revisiting the issue of surveys and deficiencies and how the whole process works at a future hearing, I believe, on the 25th. And so that's about 3 weeks away, and we can continue in discussion. I think it's one thing we heard in our visits this summer and fall to the nursing homes over and over, the problems with the surveys, the inconsistencies, the lack of ability to really work with the surveyors to try to clarify particular issues. So we'll be sure to talk thoroughly about that in about 3 weeks.
I'm mindful, members, we have at least two additional groups, and then we want to try to talk about some solutions. I'll honor, I know some people have some questions, but I just ask you, let's move on as quickly as we can so we get to other people. Hang on, because we do have some questions. Representative Aber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on Mr. Huntley's question, data would really help us, and if I don't know how much data you've collected about different places, but it would actually help if we're going to solve this, and with the survey matter, this is all kind of a big pot of the same kind of deal, but if we could know by like who the surveyors are per region, if there's more findings and if those rates are indeed higher. Otherwise, it's just anecdotal. And it doesn't help us to say, I think a lot of people have this problem. It seems like it's a deal. Wisconsin's better. And if we're really going to get it, if there are some aberrant or outlying surveyors, then that's a matter for the department to resolve. And then that's not legislative. If it's a matter that there's too many survey findings in general and they're complaining about squeaky doorknobs or something, then that's what we can address here.
I think the hearing that Chairman Boudreau has in mind should be a good place to address that. Was there another place?
Oh.
Representative Hamilton, do you have a quick question?
I just wanted to say that I am working with the associations on a bill that will help clarify some of the situations that are going on with regulations.
Okay. Why don't we proceed? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Our next group is representing the Minnesota Home Care Association. Again, I'm not quite sure who all will be here for that, so why don't you come on down and you can introduce yourselves. While they're coming down, why don't we do something? We had introductions before, and I want an opportunity for the introduction of new staff. So how about if we go around and first of all ask staff to introduce themselves, and then we'll quickly have the members also. So Mike, we'll start with you and then kind of skip around.
I'm Michael Meilenberg, and I'm with Republican Caucus Research.
I'm Tom Pender with House Research.
I'm Dave Freeman with House DFL Research.
And Randy Chen with House Research.
Anna Benelli, House Research.
And I'm Susie Giroux, the new CA for the committee.
I'm Cheryl Burke, the committee legislative.
I'm Kathy Schill. I'm the fiscal analyst for this committee.
And Jason? We had to scurry because we thought we had high-tech digital taping, and it turned out we're still at the old-tech tape. Okay, I think all the staff did. Now, maybe at least for some of the staff, may not have met Representative Boudreau. Why don't we start with you with a member introduction?
Linda Boudreau.
Brad Pinstead.
Well, we ought to see where you're from at least anyway.
Linda Boudreau lives in Faribault, represents 26B.
And I'm from New Ulm, and I represent District 21B.
And I'm Fran Bradley from Rochester.
Jim Abler, Anoka, in the city of Ramsey.
Joel Pat, St. Cloud.
Cy Tao, here in St. Paul.
Mary Ellen Otremba, from the middle of Minnesota.
Tom Huntley from Duluth, and this is my 12th year on this committee.
You have senior status, don't you? Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bangsberg, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Home Care Association. First, I want to apologize. One of our members from Rochester was unable to make it because of bad weather and is dealing with home care issues back in the Rochester community and would like to be here. But I do have her testimony. But I also have also Nazneen Khatun here with me from Best Care, and I'll let her start. We do have some handouts of both testimonies, and if somebody could come up and get those. On behalf of the Home Care Association, I just want to give you a little bit of warning. We are just in the process of gathering and collecting data aggregate across the state about this issue. It has become an issue that we need to address and take upon ourselves to better understand what's going on, as well as you're trying to learn at the same time. So as we give you this information, my members will know a lot more than I do. I know enough to be dangerous, so I'm going to allow the questions to go to my members more than myself. But after Ms. Khatun speaks, I'd like to speak a little bit about what Pat Hanks from Stanley Jones and Associates said with regards to some of the 300-plus percentage increases in some of her liability insurance as well. So with that, I'd like to defer to my colleague here.
Khatun, welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself, please.
I am Nazneen Khatun, and I'm a member of Minnesota Home Care Association, and I provide home health care services in Minneapolis here. Dear Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee, as I mentioned, I am Nazneen Khatun. I work for Best Care Home Health as an administrator. Best Care Home Health is a Medicare-certified home health agency in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Its service area includes the 7-county metropolitan region. Best Care provides skilled nursing, home health aides, rehab therapies, and a personal care attendant provider under the Medicaid program. We also work in concert with our metropolitan counties, providing home and community-based services. Our staff consists of registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, and home health aides, physical and occupational therapists, personal care attendants, and office support staff. St. Paul companies insured us for a professional liability insurance until its exit from the healthcare arena in 2001. Since then, our premiums have increased more than 300%. They were increased from $6,000 to $23,000 per year. In my view, there is no justification for such a steep increase. Let me just explain why. The cost of insurance is usually justified on the basis of perceived liability as well as the claims ratio. An additional factor could also be lack of competitive pressures. With the exit of St. Paul companies from this market, I believe the competitive pressure is gone, allowing the premiums to skyrocket. The perceived liabilities in this area would include the risk associated with the large pool of non-professional staff providing services at patients' home without constant or direct supervision. An additional factor could be the need for employees to travel from home to home in the course of a single day to provide services. The insurance companies and some of our counties in our area require the home care agencies to carry this non-owned auto insurance, which is very expensive and it's not easily available. While above considerations make theoretical sense and may be a justification for the increased premiums, a careful review of the claims data would convince anyone that the claims ratio is quite negligible in all the areas mentioned above. In fact, I can categorically state that the company I represent has never made any claims involving situations mentioned above. I would be remiss if I failed to mention that in addition to professional liability insurance, the cost of the employee health as well as the workman's comp insurances are also registering at a double digit or sometimes more increases every year. While insurance is really becoming a burden and reimbursement rates have remained unchanged since July of 2002, it is noteworthy that the reimbursement rate in our state is 25 to 35% lower than our neighboring states. Respected Chair and members of the committee, please take it from someone from the trenches that if the increased premiums do not become more reasonable and the reimbursement rates do not increase, it may become impossible for home health care agencies to continue to function. It is particularly hard for an agency like ours with 85% of its clients getting reimbursed from the Medicaid program. How can one attract and retain well-qualified employees without offering them competitive wages? This is particularly important in an environment of a service of a severe shortage of nurses in our country. On behalf of the Minnesota Home Care Association, I would like to express my deep gratitude for this opportunity to share my thoughts with all the members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Katoon. Mr. Bangsman, you want to do a comment? We have a copy. I hope you can give us kind of the short version of this report, if you don't mind.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. On behalf of Pat Majernovic Hanks, who's a member of ours, works for Stanley Jones and Associates down in Rochester. Their agency is primarily physical, occupational, speech, and respiratory therapist. There are only about 35 members in their agency, so as a small agency, they witnessed an over 340% increase in their professional liability insurance in the last 2 years. And basically, they have had no claims in the last 20 years of having health care or professional liability insurance against their agency. And part of the reason why, again, was the loss of St. Paul companies has brought this phenomenon upon them. Now, as I've talked to other members around the state of Minnesota, I'm trying to find out how many people have had liability insurance with St. Paul companies, and a majority of them had, and now they are looking out upon other insurance agents that are available out there or cover areas, and they cannot find the rates. Some of our agencies that have had rates or have had insurance with other agencies that still exist their premiums are slowly creeping up to the numbers that are similar to here. For example, when with Ms. Hanks explained to me that her coverage was $2,500 and now is $11,000 a year, that's not atypical for agencies now to see the prices creeping up over the years, again with no claims against her agency. And just to add on one other point, she's got a 0.92 ratio on her workers' compensation claims, and those increases have gone up 19% from 19% to 43%, again with no understanding of why those claims are going up for her agency. Upon finding out what her premiums would be, she contacted her insurance agent and another large insurance in the Rochester area and asked them to hold out and bid for insurance. And the sad fact remained that this was the best that they could do despite getting bids from 8 different companies. And basically she has not received, she's not yet received bids for professional liability insurance for 04 and 05. Her insurance agent has indicated that the rate for professional liability will most likely remain at about $11,000. So it has stabilized a little bit. It was about a year and a half ago that this really started to shock many of our agencies. However, there is still increases throughout the market and throughout our industry. And basically, to add more problems to the mix, there are additional insurances that are starting to increase, and Nazneen had explained that earlier in her testimony. And thank you for the opportunity for us to to speak before you here today, and Nazneen or I'd be willing to stand for questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Our next group is the ARM organization, Mr. Nelson and others.
Mr. Chair, I do have a handout.
Our page will come around in just a moment to pick that up, pass it out. Jason.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simonson.
Yes. While he's handing those out, I just have a comment regarding the home health agencies. It seems like, as it was stated in one of these letters, that they're only being reimbursed for approximately 60% or so of their costs. So I think this is definitely something we need to look at. Home health serves a vital function in the state, and I would hate to see them go out of business because of some of these issues. So if this is something we can look at in the future, I'd appreciate
it. Fair enough. Mr. Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for inviting us on this really critical issue. I am Bruce Nelson. I'm the executive director of ARM. We represent about 140 providers who support people with disabilities across the state of Minnesota. And with me is Diana Harms from Accordia. And Diana and her agency functions as a broker for about half of the members of ARM, or half the industry, so it's quite conversant in trends related to various insurances across the industry that ARM represents. I've prepared a chart for you today that I want to quickly go through, because these various insurances, as you heard earlier, some of them do interrelate. And I want to touch very quickly on some of the trends and the reasons for these numbers, maybe an example or two on some of the impact. And I'll go very quickly so we can get to the final column on liability. One thing I want to mention before I get into it is that when you combine all of these expenditures, they represent about 7.4% of total expenditure on average for each ARM agency. So that this is a significant a part of what we do. On the chart, you see in the yellow, column on the left is based on an ARM survey that we did looking back to 2002. The other, except for the auto, we forgot to ask that question, so that's a conservative forecast. Next two columns are forecasts, that we try to be very conservative, and then the final column is the cumulative increase. If you look at very quickly on the health insurance line, over the 3 years, 34% increase, but I think it's very significant to note if you look on the caveat down below that in 2002, 56% of those members we surveyed, and we had a very, I can't remember the response, but it was very high, and in subsequent years we're estimating around 50% of all of our members each year make a change in plan by either increasing the deductible, increasing the co-pays, increasing the employee share of insurance, or reducing the level of benefit that people get. So had that not happened, you would have seen significantly even higher increases than the cumulative 34%. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as you know, in years past, when we've looked at COLAs and 3% or 4%, this has a significant impact on the overall compensation of people when you have those kinds of increases. And on the flip side, the reduction in benefit. On workers' compensation, this ties right into the health care figures. You can see that we've been trending upwards the last 3 years for a cumulative 80% increase, primarily driven by, and Ms. Harms can speak to this more fluently than I perhaps, but as I understand it, primarily driven by medical costs. So there's a relationship there. On the property side, you heard testimony earlier today, and yes, the increases were profoundly affected by 9/11. We're still seeing some effects of that and the hurricanes as well. So that's a stunning amount as well. On the auto insurance, big increases. But one of the most troubling things for us as members, especially for our smaller providers, is that companies are now not willing, many of them, to write policies for people to drive their own vehicles. This means if you have a small waiver program and you can't afford to have a van or a fleet of vans, and you need to rely on people riding using their own vehicles to get people around in the community, they're simply, many of them, not covering that now. On the liability side, I'm going to turn over to Ms. Harms here, but one, as you can see, we're trending, the trend is moving positively, although there's a cumulative 49%. I know as recent as about a year ago, maybe even 6 months, many of our members were not even able to get quotes. And now there is some conversation going on, and you can see the trend line is a little bit better, at least this year, on that line. And with that, I'll turn over to Ms. Harms.
Ms. Nelson, just a quick question. Your cumulative chart, it looks like it's simply the addition of each of the years and then showing a total. However, I'm assuming that there's a compound effect, and that if you were really looking for the total effect of the rate increases in any of these categories from the first year to through the last year, it would be more than that.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We wanted to be err on the caution side.
Make the math easier. Huh? Okay.
Make the math easier, but I always hesitate to bring numbers before any committee that looks inflated, so we wanted to be concerned.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Harms?
Hi, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As Bruce had mentioned, on the liability side, in the last couple of years...
I'm sorry, would you introduce yourself for a tape?
Oh, sure, I'm sorry. I'm Diana Harms with Acordia Insurance. We're the fifth largest broker in the world, and we have an office here in Minneapolis with about 200 employees. And I am specifically in charge of a program for the developmentally disabled. residential care facilities. And as Bruce mentioned, I insure about, well, over 45% of all their members. And these numbers here are very reflective of what I've seen on my insured's risk. And in regards to the liability, like you mentioned here, yes, we have seen the trend come down. In 2002 and a year ago, at the first of the year, I had several phone calls from very frantic people thinking that they were going to have to close their doors because they could not find liability insurance, or it was 300 or 400 times what they were paying previously. That resulted in many of them being insured with the MJUA. And there is a difference, as you've heard testimony earlier today, between the for-profit organization and a non-profit organization. In the marketplace, we see one or two companies that will look at a for-profit organization, and then maybe three or four that will look at a non-profit organization. But again, it is still very tough, but it has quieted down a little bit. I think generally with the insurance marketplace, we've seen a slight softening in the insurance industry of the marketplace, and therefore we're seeing a slight loosening of the belt per se, but I don't think we'll see anything too drastically change because of the medical malpractice arena and these associations getting tied into that whole arena also. As far as the auto, there again, we continue to see increased rates. And as Bruce mentioned, for the smaller care provider, it is pretty impossible to find insurance there. And many times they can't afford to go buy the vans needed to take care of their residents. And they do rely on their employees to drive their own personal vehicle. And so then the corporation needs non-owned auto liability. And often we've had to turn to the state auto plan for that, which is limited at a $350,000 limit. And then you get into the whole situation of contractual liability that they have with the counties and the requirements that the counties have in those contracts. Usually those requirements are $1 million, so obviously now you have a provider that's in violation of their contract as far as limits of insurance carried. And we see that across the board again also. Property insurance, again, as Bruce mentioned and you heard earlier this morning, we still see that trending a little up. 9/11 had a big effect on that, but the insurance industry as a whole has seen many disastrous claims in the last 20 years. Hurricane Andrew, the fires in California this year, and some of those things are driving factors as why those increases are continuing to be seen. It's again on a small provider where they're starting to open up one group home. It's virtually impossible to buy insurance for that property. I right now can think of only one insurance company that I've been able to place insurance for without going to a surplus lines market and then having reduced coverage for that insured again. Workers' compensation, again, as Bruce mentioned, driven by medical costs, but also this industry does have claims history, but the cost of the insurance is going up dramatically. I'd say about 80% of my insurers are in the assigned risk plan now with the state of Minnesota on workers' compensation insurance. And those rates effective on April 1 for the classification that they fall under are going up 32%. So again, huge increases there in that side. I personally don't sell health and benefits coverages. I'm a property and casualty salesperson, so I can't comment a whole lot on there. I do have colleagues in my office that sell in this industry. The health care costs and the numbers represented here are very reflective of what I've heard.
Ms. Harms, in the liability area, you've probably heard the testimony from some of the other areas, some pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
And if I looked at this, the forecast is only 5%, and 15%, but not, I mean, we heard some doubling and tripling kinds of numbers.
Definitely, and we've seen those in the last year. As I mentioned, a year ago, for an example, I had an insured that called me up. His effective date of his coverage was December 31st. And he called me probably at 2 o'clock that afternoon and asked me if there was anything I could do. His agent had just left his office and handed him a 300% increase in liability insurance, basically taking his insurance on the liability side from about $12,000 annually to $300,000 annually. He was, unfortunately, at that late hour with an effective date right there that day, I couldn't help him until the first quarter or April 1st. And at that point, we were able to place him elsewhere. We could not get his premium back down to that $12,000 range. We got it more in about the $60,000 range, so it came down significantly, but still a dramatic increase at 40-50%.
Now, Ms. Harms, in that specific example, is there any kind of claims history that might
explain that? No, the gentleman had no general or professional liability claims, and that we continue to see across the board.
Well, then what I wonder, Mr. Nelson, is that the liability projection here is only 5% increase. And if these kind of examples are typical, it would seem like that's a pretty low number. How do I reconcile that?
Mr. Chairman, I was quite surprised, too, to see that when you put the numbers together and project them forward.
If it was only 5%, we probably wouldn't even be having this meeting if that was all over the place. But
I'll speak on that, Mr. Chairman. We gave him those conservative numbers, and part of that is because the bulk of my insureds in this industry are all with one insurance company and have been for quite some time. They've had very good loss history in this arena and have been able to keep those liability premiums down and continue to will do so in 2004. The numbers that you're hearing about, and as you've heard in early testimony today, with the St. Paul companies going out of business, and so many carriers in this industry or that used to write in this industry, we've probably seen four or five carriers that have gone out of business, filed bankruptcy, and disappeared off the map. And the marketplace has shrunk so significantly. That's where we see those. Once the insurance is placed, then we don't see the dramatic increases as significantly. It's a little bit more base merited on that individual insured's loss ratio or their losses. So that's kind of where that 5% number came from.
So, Harms, how about people? I mean, sometimes it can be also distorted if the carriers are much more selective and just won't even offer it. Is there any of that indication in the marketplace?
Oh, we still have that situation. I have probably currently out of, say, the 80 insureds in the residential care, not just group homes, but nursing homes and assisted living, home health care industry, I probably have eight of them with the MJUA because we couldn't find an insurance carrier that will take them. And then that whole opens up a whole other realm of problems, too, as far as their purchasing, or if it's a large organization and they need umbrella coverage financially. You can't buy an umbrella, or if you're going to, it's so unbelievably priced, it's unaffordable.
We're actually going to have another section here talking a bit about insurance. I just couldn't resist, but I do have maybe one final from me anyway, and that is, I think you've heard from other places that it seems as though this region has very low, not just individual people and the particular areas that we're covering today, but the entire region. Do the carriers do any kind of regional adjustments in risk so that that Minnesota could take advantage of the fact that we have seemingly lower incidence of claims?
I'm sure they do. Being from the agency side, not the insurance company side, it's a little tougher for me to answer that question. What I've read in insurance periodicals, et cetera, Minnesota is not, as you say, a crisis state at all. It's a state kind of in question, but I think the insurance companies have been a little friendlier here than they are in other states. But again, I'm not sure how to answer that question.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Nelson?
One final comment, Mr. Sure. Questions, and one is in regards to your question, Mr. Chairman, regarding the trend downward in liability. From my non-expert point of view and following these things, there seems to be an inverse relationship to the stock market, and as investment income can be relied on more by the insurance companies, they rely less than on the premiums. So I think there's part of that going on. And finally, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to just say how much we appreciated last year with a huge fiscal crisis of being able to hold, although we don't like any kind of a rate cut to 1%, we very much appreciated that. It hurts, but I think it might be fair to say that what is hurting us even more is the cumulative effect of all of these rising costs that have a direct relationship principally on direct support professionals. And we're estimating that upwards of near 3 million hours may be lost in work hours and layoffs of people in direct support to people with disabilities. They lose about 5% in income. And it's probably going to be a combination of two. And because of this, we're seeing now in homes across the state a decrease in quality of life for people, and we're concerned with people with disabilities, and we're concerned about their health and safety. We do need to address these critical rising cost issues so we can maintain a high level of staff and a quality of life for people. And just anecdotally, we know, for example, in Dakota County, that reliance on crisis services has increased fourfold in the last year because people are just home more and they can't get out in the community, and tensions are flaring up and there's fewer staff. So that's the kind of impact that we're immediately seeing as a result primarily of these rising insurance costs.
Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Nelson, it would be nice if you could I really like this, and it helps me a lot. But if what I don't know is how much the health insurance and so on is in total amount versus workers' comp versus the other ones. And so if you could supply me with some estimate of what percentage of your total insurance is in each one of these categories. If the auto insurance is a very small piece, then it doesn't make much difference to you if it went up 70%. But if it's a huge part of your insurance costs, then it might. I have no idea how much you're paying in each one of these categories.
Now, if we could follow up with that, because we really need to move on.
And, but I have one other.
Provide the committee with that information.
Maybe this is a question for the committee and you, Mr. Chairman, but liability includes, you know, the medical professional malpractice type thing, plus lots of other things. Mm-hmm. And if we're focusing on the medical professional liability, it'd be nice to separate that from somebody walking into your building and having a 2x4 hit them in the head.
That's fair. I mean, here today, as far as I was concerned, it was just sort of the overall picture, really, of liability insurance. But I guess if you can differentiate, maybe as long as you can make just a brief comment in that liability insurance. I think you've sort of heard the comment. Can you break it apart as far as what might be med mal versus other umbrella liabilities?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Yes, you could. We could come up with and help Bruce come up with those numbers to separate those off. Roughly off the top of my head, thinking of a couple of insureds of mine, I'd say the general liability is probably 30% of the premium in comparison to what the professional liability would be.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Harms, just a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me some examples of claims dealing with someone driving their own car versus having a car owned by the agency?
Yeah, I can give you a quick example of an insured that I am aware of that had a claim. They had an employee that, for some reason, decided not to use the company van and took two clients out to an outing and was struck by a semi-truck. And ultimately, one of the clients died. But the claim is probably about a $250,000 claim. The employee's insurance would have been primary there, but this employee did not have insurance as required by Minnesota law. And therefore, the non-owned auto liability kicked in that situation for my insured. And that's one example of the exposure that's out there.
Representative Kumba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How about in cases when employees are just simply driving to a caregiver at their home? Are they still required to use?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
Many times caregivers drive to a place without having clients with them. Are they still required to have a...
Most county contracts still require a company to have hired an unowned liability, because just like for me working for Accordia, when I'm doing my daily duties going to and from work, my insurance is primary, but their insurance is going to be excess if something happens in that situation when I'm acting on behalf of the company. And so, yeah, there's a daily exposure out there for the home health care industry as a whole.
Well, thank you. I'm mindful of the thank you very much for your testimony. Next is the Minnesota Development Achievement Center. And Mr. Barker, and anybody else be with them? Oh, Mr. Barker. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Representative Bradley, members of the committee. My name is John Wayne Barker, and I'm the Executive Director of Merrick, Inc. We are a day training and habilitation provider, also known as a DT&H. There are approximately 125 DT&H providers in the state of Minnesota serving 13,000 adults with developmental disabilities, principally providing work opportunities for those individuals to have meaningful work and make satisfactory wages. For the purposes of my testimony, I'm going to leave out the DT&H because I have a tendency to run that together into something else, and I'm just going to speak to state-operated and then private-operated programs, if that's okay. Over the past 2 years, we've worked on legislation with former Representative Kalkuki that would have extended the liability insurance limit of $300 per person and $1 million per accident that's stipulated by law for state-operated programs. And I appreciate the committee's interest in getting ideas on this issue, and I can offer the following comments. While opponents would assert otherwise, extending this limit to private-operated programs is not about tort reform. Rather, it corrects unequal practices by providing us the same liability limitations that already apply to state-operated programs. It is important to remember that private-operated programs provide the very same services to the very same types of clients under the very same rules and receive the very same reimbursement as state-operated programs. There is absolutely no difference between the state and the private-operated programs, and neither one provides medical treatment to clients that attend their programs, so medical malpractice cases simply do not apply to this instance. While opponents will claim otherwise, extending this limit does not excuse private-operated programs from being responsible because our contracts are held by the host county and can be terminated within 30 days. Again, the same type of responsibility would apply to private-operated programs as state-operated programs. While opponents will plead otherwise, the limit of $300 per person and $1 million per accident has proven sufficient for state-operated programs and should be extended to private-operated programs. Moreover, a report in December of 2002 from the International Risk Management Institute showed that 25% of the states have a per-person minimum of $15,000 per accident, $15,000 per person, and a per-accident minimum of $40,000 or less, with the highest minimum at $50,000 per person and $125,000 per accident. The state of Minnesota currently requires $30,000 per person and $70,000 per accident, a limit that is 90% and 70% less than the two limits we want extended to private-operated programs. While opponents will argue that such a limitation will have no effect on insurance rates, we can prove that doing nothing does impact rates. The following numbers represent the actual annual cost of insurance coverage for Merrick Inc. since 2001, and in 39 years of operation, we've never had a claim. Commercial property has gone from $2,744 to $18,503, an increase of 675%. Commercial crime has gone from $1,485 to $1,131, a decrease of 24%. General and professional liability has gone from $17,353 to $55,584, an increase of 320%. And the commercial umbrella went from $9,300 to $27,456, an increase of 295% in 2002, and we had to drop it in 2003. These are real dollars intended for client services, not insurance coverage, and we believe it is time to make a reasonable change. We all know that despite our best intentions and efforts, accidents do happen. And while any injury to an individual is tragic and needs to be met with compassion and treatment, one has to ask the question, is it the intent of the state to treat the private sector differently from the public sector, and to put at risk all the clients, employees, and local community partners connected to a private-operated program because of one accident? With unlimited exposure, that is a real possibility, and I urge you to consider extending the existing liability limits applied to state-operated programs to the private-operated programs. The solution really is, and others may argue that this is a simplistic answer, by providing the limits, over time you will bring more providers to the market, you will reduce costs, you will provide an environment in which programs can band together and try to self-fund coverage because there is a limit to the risk that's out there. And right now that doesn't exist. So thank you for listening today, and I'll answer any questions or clarify any of the information I've provided.
Thank you very much for your testimony. we now switch gears into at least gaining some understanding of the insurance market. I think Ms. Harms gave us a little help met before, but Mr. Johnson?
Here.
And Mr. Johnson, from what a previous comment that was made, I think Mr. Nelson made, I just want to assure you that this committee will do all we can to stimulate the stock market so that the problem will go away. Is that going to take care of it for us?
Determine that will help.
Well, all we can do probably won't make much of a dent, I'm afraid. Please proceed.
Hey, Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. With the time here, Mr. Chairman, there's three areas I'd like to briefly talk about. I'm going to reference some documents that the committee, I believe, will find helpful, which a myriad of more details, facts, findings, summary statistics on the industry, et cetera, that I know everyone will find helpful. I don't have copies here today, but briefly, I'd like to do some overview comments on the macro cost drivers in the property casualty liability insurance system in this state and nation. The second area is briefly comment on profitability of property casualty insurers. And then the third area is just briefly comment on what, if anything, can Minnesota do to impact the trends and the testimony and the premiums that witnesses have been talking about. So with the first comment area, rather than macro cost drivers, and unfortunately this has to get into economics and insurance details and capital markets, but those are the key major areas, and they are directly impacting everybody in this room and the increases that the people are experiencing. The study I'd like to reference, Mr. Chairman, is the Tillinghast Towers and Perrin study, U.S. Tort Costs, 2003 Update, Trends and Findings on the Costs of the U.S. Tort System. And at the core and key and initial area to address in regards to why are individuals, businesses, firms experiencing what they're seeing is at the core, the liability insurance premiums deal with the cost of the tort system. And so this study, Mr. Chairman, their key finding and what they start out the study with is talking about how the growth rate in tort costs in 2002 in America was 13.3%. It was the second double-digit year in a row. That compared with the increase in the gross domestic product for that year of 3.6%. Again, this is a very helpful overview looking back over 50 years comparing tort cost growth, gross domestic product growth. And for instance, over the 50 years, what they indicate that the U.S. tort costs have increased by a factor of 100-fold. Gross domestic product has increased by a factor of 35, and the U.S. population has increased by a factor of less than 2. So the point of the matter is that one of, not the only one, I'll talk about a few of the others, but one of the pivotal key core areas that has to be looked at, both in the state and nation, is the U.S. tort system. There are a myriad of more details there. I know that we don't have the time here today to go into that. But I would like to just, briefly comment on a couple of, there are a number of issue areas, tort cost areas, that we're all in this boat together. In other words, as this legal system and how it is affecting the capital base, the money that's within the property casualty insurers, the links are there. This gets tied into the international financial capital markets, the reinsurance markets. So the details to go through this isn't the place here today. We don't have the time to do that. You know, day-long sessions are spent on one narrow issue out of these capital issues, international financial markets. But let me mention, here's a list of areas, for instance, in the U.S. tort system that are directly relevant to the liability costs. Asbestos, silicosis, toxic mold, medical malpractice, construction defects, lead, obesity, the fast food litigation, reality TV, arsenic-treated lumber, guns, genetically modified foods, pharmaceuticals, medical devices, security exposures. Major areas of tort litigation in this country, and dollars are flowing out of the property casualty, the liability insurance marketplace, and it affects premiums nationwide, state by state. Specific factors in that area that the study, the study I'm going to reference, and I'll just give you the name of it, and this would be instructive. There's a myriad of details here, so all I can do is highlight a few.
liability trends, issues, and jury verdicts, impact on insurance liability and excess casualty markets. It's an Insurance Information Institute study dated October of 2003 by presented by Dr. Robert Hartwig, their Senior Vice President and Chief Economist. They're at www.triplei.org. And I think everybody in the room here can work their way off of that website and can obtain a copy of that study. In an overview of the nationwide trends, in that study, and I'll mention, these are factors that are directly relevant to the cost of liability insurance by the groups and individuals in Minnesota today. There's a more sophisticated and innovative plaintiff's trial bar in this country. The trial bar is flush with cash as a result of recent litigation in this nation. The persistent high medical inflation is affecting everything. You've heard comments on work comp costs. It's there. It's affecting liability jury awards. This study identifies, and other groups have looked at, the venue and states. What's happening state by state varies in tort litigation. The American Tort Reform Association has identified 7 states as judicial hellholes and then documented the reason for the changes in the tort litigation environment that's directly affecting payouts, dollar, capital movement in this nation. The growth in class actions in this state and nation. There's an erosion of tort reforms that many states have passed over the past 20 years. There's an acceptance of junk science. And I could stop and talk about the what's happened in mold, toxic tort litigations, but again, I don't think we have time here. The media coverage, and frankly, some U.S. corporations have done really dumb things. So this is off of their listing of issues that are relevant to the liability marketplace in this state and nation and affect what businesses and individuals are paying. And in these studies are the documentations and the trends in the million-dollar jury verdicts. It's up dramatically. And the probability and the percentages of plaintiffs winning, plaintiff verdicts, and the statistics and data out of the jury verdict research data a compilation organization. So the point of the matter is one of the key cost drivers, one of the key factors affecting it in a variety of ways. That's just a very a summary picture looking at that. I think in addition, and then again, what's happening in America, it contrasts with other industrialized nations around the world. We're a very different nation compared to most everybody else, decidedly different. And what we choose to do and how we pay for and the amount of money we pay for is very dramatically different than virtually every other industrialized nation on the globe. And that's just the reality. So the numbers are there, and we've chosen as a country to do that. And it affects the price of those products. I think then how the legal system operates, how the tort system operates, is it efficient? I think there's good data to suggest that it's actually an inefficient way, an extremely inefficient way in terms of dealing with injuries, compensation. But again, I think that's probably a topic for another day. So all of those factors have affected and tied into, it's affected, how the liability insurance, what's paid out. The reinsurance market is tied into that. People have referenced here 9/11 and what happened on 9/11. And I think that, the developments of 9/11, I'll just give some summary numbers, and I think the committee will find this instructive because, payouts and whether it's in a number of different lines affect the bottom line capital capacity, the ability of companies to write insurance. Here's the numbers on what happened, and these are changing, but as of today, as a result of the 9/11 incident, the dollar payouts, the consensus amount of dollar payouts is $40.2 billion capital money that has been paid out of the property casualty insurance industry. I think the categories are instructive. The two buildings was $3.5 billion. Other property around it was $6 billion. Business interruption coverage to date has been $11 billion. Workers' compensation, $2 billion. Now, that's twice the size of the Minnesota's entire system was paid out on that one day. Aviation liability, $3.5 billion. Life insurance, $2.7 billion. Other liability, $10 billion. And that number will grow. The point is this, does that affect the pricing here? Yes. It surely does, because what it affects is the capital The capital is the net, you know, the surplus, as the insurance industry terms it. The surplus is just that's the insurance industry's term for equivalent of another business would be net worth. In other words, what's the capital underpinning or supporting that industry? And the capital within the property casualty industry has had a dramatic decrease. And that dramatic decrease affects pricing. And let me kind of slide into that and talk about profitability just briefly, because I do want to talk about just if Minnesota can do anything. I think as to those that think or wonder that, you know, has this been a profitable venture for companies, liability insurance in Minnesota or nationwide? And the answer is no, it has not been. And the statistics, again, as I referenced, particularly the III study, I just urge the committee, if you want to get into the very specific details about, you know, what's happened to the capital account, what's the return on equity of property casualty insurers compared with other U.S. industries, and over the last 25 years, it is consistently and dramatically lower than what other U.S. industries are experiencing. In recent years, it's been a less than 5% return on equity. And again, the comparative numbers are just instructive on how has the industry fared, and they've not been faring well, and frankly, because they've had a difficult time doing what insurers try to do, which is to estimate, calculate risk and future loss, collect enough premium to pay for that, and then try to make money, sell it in a competitive environment. And the systems have not been operating well in that regard. And so as you look at, you know, what's happened again with profitability, as you look at with what those areas that I mentioned up front about asbestos and silicosis and toxic mold and medical malpractice, have dramatically and significantly affected the capital, the money underpinning the property casualty insurers, liability insurers, and they've dramatically and negatively affected that. That affects the prices that people pay. There's no question about that. And so I think as you look at, again, the diminishing of the industry surplus or their net worth, as you look at their return on equity numbers, they're consistently lower than other U.S. industries. In the year 2001, property casualty insurers experienced for the first time in the history a net, they ended that year with a negative net loss for the entire industry nationwide. Well, that's not a sign of an industry riding high in money. It's not a sign of an industry that's, and the reality is that a number of factors are just causing a challenge. The marketplace is reconfiguring. A number of businesses are self-insuring. Comments were made up front. I was read that Wall Street Journal article of September 29th about doctors and nursing homes operating without liability insurance going bare. 20% of the physicians in Miami-Dade County are now operating with no medical malpractice insurance, and deliberately. But it can't afford the price of the product down there. And that article references those Arkansas nursing homes that a chunk of them are choosing to operate outside of it. And the point is this. I think liability insurance is a way to deal with the risk, but we can wipe out all the liability insurers in this nation. It's not going to eliminate the risk. The risk is there. Insurance is a way to transfer, manage it. And the mechanism is struggling to do that, just, you know, to perform that function, to do it in a way that they can make money. Because what people here have testified to is what we surely know is that companies are leaving marketplaces. They don't leave marketplaces because they're making money. In fact, if they can make money, they like to go to marketplaces. And the number of competitors will grow if there's money to be made in that marketplace. This is in economics analysis, this is an industry that's easy to get into. If you have money, you can buy the management. So there's no barriers to entry in economic terms for companies or people with money or businesses to get into the liability insurance industry, and we're not seeing that happen. So I think from a, you know, a profitability standpoint, we are at today the financial rankings of insurance industries, the ratings of the companies doing business in this state are in a persistent accelerating decline, the financial rankings of companies. Again, not indications of an industry that's riding high on profits or making a lot of money. And additionally, we are at a 10-year high, a record number of insurance company insolvencies. They're going under, going broke. Why are they going broke? They're going broke because they have been unable to measure and estimate the liabilities. The liabilities have been exceeding what they've been able to estimate, and so they have not collected enough money to pay for the claims underlying those systems. So we're at a 10-year high in insolvencies, and the biggest reason for the insurer insolvencies is the reserve deficiencies. You picked up a paper from a week ago. You saw St. Paul Companies, as part of this merger they're going through, adding $250 million to the reserve for a line of insurance that they stopped writing a few years ago. Well, I mean, they do that because they have to do that because the underlying legal system is producing results that's telling them you haven't reserved enough money for how many claims you're going to pay out. And so we've seen those reserve deficiencies, and it's affecting all of us. It's affecting buyers in all 50 states. And so those are just some of the background comments on profitability. Lastly, I just to comment, Mr. Chairman and committee members, that in terms of can Minnesota do anything, I don't think there's any doubt. As you look around, states can and have done specific actions that have directly affected the price of the buyers in that state. There's no question about that. And again, I want to stop because I want to see if committee members have questions, but the states can do things, but what has to be part of that discussion from our industry's perspective, we've got to look at the legal system and the payouts and the ground rules and how it's operating, and do we need to change that? Clearly, House File 1681 is a bill, for instance, has the medical malpractice changes in it that the hospitals, the emergency room physicians, the doctors have addressed as trying to contain that exposure and those risks. I'll end with Mr. Chairman, I'll end with a comment on these residual market mechanisms and just urge caution about. We have, people have referenced the MJUA, the Minnesota Joint Underwriting Association. And I was here when it was created. It was created in an earlier, it's called a hard market when buyers have a hard time getting liability insurance. Minnesota was one of the few states back in the late 80s and created an MJUA. Today, we're the only state out of 50 states that has a residual market mechanism for general liability insurance. So the rest of the nation, many of whom are experiencing a far worse crisis than what we've heard here today, are moving forward without a state-supplied market. And here's the caution factor. We've got an MJUA. The decision was made. It's there. And the medical malpractice is also sold out of that insurance. We've got a work comp assigned risk plan. But if you rely on a residual market mechanism to supply coverage, then there's a good chance you're not going to encourage or see a positive development of the private competitive market. It's an alternative to the private market. And there are states where the residual market mechanisms have taken over a line of insurance, and there isn't any private market. So, and I know that's not the intention or the desire, but this MJUA was, for instance, never designed to write excess coverage. That is not the reason this thing was set up. This was set up as a last resort market for businesses to get general liability if they couldn't get it any other way. So I just urge caution about the utilization or putting risk in there, because then it displaces a private market, and I think it can lead to the wrong direction, wrong incentive. So I've gone a little bit longer, Mr. Chairman, than I thought, but I would appreciate the committee's time. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Now, let me ask one. You sort of implied something about strategies, including some of the things that we've proposed in medical malpractice. One of our challenges, because we repeatedly challenged, well, if you take these actions, will it really make a difference? And I'm wondering if you have, either today, if you could follow up kind of any correlation, cause-effect in actions taken that we can demonstrate will make a difference. And I'd love if you could quantify, but I'm realistic enough to know it's pretty hard to quantify.
Yeah.
But how about just the ability to be able to show that actions have made a difference?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, absolutely. There's no question. I don't have it here with me, but at that initial overview hearing that you conducted, material both from the California medical malpractice reforms, were the groups in that state that documented the effect of their legislation with caps on premiums. And then in addition, that article that I handed out at that hearing that medical economics journal study that specifically documented the experience between states with medical malpractice award caps and those without it, and the direct correlation with lower premiums in those states that have adopted. So I don't think there's any question that the literature supports state action can and does impact premiums paid.
Representative Abe, but we're going to have to move along quickly here.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, are we going to revisit this issue, or is this our only chance to talk about this?
Well, we are going to be hearing the health care cost containment, and there are some dimensions of that that we'll be spending some upwards of an hour on Wednesday, I think, set aside specifically medical malpractice. I mean, that's not all of what this liability is, obviously. But
well, let me just take a crack at two questions, and then I'll... this is actually, there's some fertile ground here, I think, if we could plow it a little bit. But, Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, the testimony ahead of you was that these folks had no claims hardly at all, and I was actually working in the audience talking about some of these parallel things, and the anecdotal report is that we never have claims and we're going up 10 times. Is Minnesota a high claim state or a low claim state?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, it depends. Case system by system, are you talking about liability? Are you talking about medical malpractice? You'd have to, you know, identify the area because the experience varies.
Mr. Chair, we're talking, and Mr. Johnson, we're talking today about the liability component on these. What you were talking about today with these home care groups, home and the nursing care. Homes, and this specific subset. They assert there's no claims.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't have today, you know, the company experience that have been writing these lines. I trust that what the groups here have testified as to their own experience is what it is. But that's true. Here's my comment. The no claims testimony, most of the people in this room haven't filed a homeowner's or an auto claim, and that's the way the systems have to operate. The point of the matter is that risk in a pool, however big or small, the majority of people in the pool are not going to file claims, and they're going to pay premiums because that's their piece of the risk. For those that file the claims, trust me, for those that file, collect way more than they'll ever pay. But that's how insurance has to operate. So the fact that people, group of businesses, individuals have had a long period of time of not filing claims, I'd expect that. And that doesn't really mean that group or that class is not going to experience increasing premiums. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They likely are.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I think that it would be helpful for this member and maybe for us that we could see what the incidence of claims in Minnesota on this particular topic is. I mean, you're here as the expert representing your insurance group and the group of insurers who represent you down to like one person, I guess. The CNA people and Guide One are still doing some work here. But I'm puzzled. I believe that my impression is that Minnesota is a low claim state in this particular niche, and I don't understand why companies wouldn't come in getting to experience the benefit of a 10 times increase in premiums in 5 years. I mean, and they'd probably would, if they could come in at a 5 times increase, they'd become the bargain and they could sell it. I mean, things haven't gone up. I mean, we're fixing capital markets and all that, but a lot of those events were non-Minnesota markets. And I don't know why we couldn't create a niche where a Minnesota-only company could come in and start this up. And failing that, you're going to find yourself in the concern about doing this MJUA business because nobody's left here. So help us out here with some information we can use.
Mr. Johnson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wish they wouldn't come and write it. I mean, I don't get calls from Hartford and Munich Re and other insurers. And I share the same. I do. Desires or concerns, but I can tell you this, that those entities and individuals with capital, there's quite a few of them around, can readily move it in and write it if they want to. Can readily move it in and write coverage here, this coverage and specifically, if they want to. And they're not. And so I think it behooves us to back up and ask the question then why, and I know that's part of this, why aren't those people with capital, entities, businesses, whatever, moving money in? Because if the risk is that, looks that good and that potentially profitable, all I can assure you, Representative Abler, is that this is truly a kind of a classical competitive market, you know, competitive marketplace where money can move in and write it if there's profits to be made, or if the conclusion is that there's profits to be made and it's not happening.
I think that Representative Neighbor is right. This is one of the really tough parts, because it's hard to get the kind of data that could explain, and you could say that a free market would take care of it, but then if we could only get the right people to come to us and sort of show us why the persons with capital or the companies with capital, whoever it is, don't find this attractive, because they apparently don't. I mean, and I know there's some national effects, so it is kind of a dilemma.
Question is, and this, if we can find it, is Commerce Department, are we hard to work with? Don't we approve people that want to come in? Are there companies on the table waiting to be approved? We've denied their applications, et cetera. Those are the kind of things that help us.
Mr. Chair, I think those are fair questions. I know we're running out of time. I'd be happy to continue the dialogue about there's other issues that are relevant that we haven't had a chance to get in here today, and that's clearly one of them.
Well, I think there's several of us who stand ready, even not without formal hearings, to continue the effort on it. Representative Joel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Johnson, thanks for the broad overview of the big picture. I know that the industry has challenges, too. My question is going to be, would you return when we have our hearing on nursing home and healthcare facilities survey deficiencies, because there has been some assumptions that those facilities that have increased deficiencies have had the correlation with the increased rates. And I'm wondering if you could come and address that at a future hearing.
Yeah, Mr. Johnson, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Representative Tremba. No?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just, is the report that you mentioned on the website, or do I need to ask for a copy?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I think if I don't have the answer. I'll follow back up with you or the chair. Please, everybody know that.
Yeah, thank you.
With the committee, because I also would like to follow up on those. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Members, our last topic had been sort of the really critical one. I would ask if maybe the imperative, because I think the imperative had a last couple of sheets, we can at least confirm what those sheets are saying, because I think if members will bring that back out to yourself. There were at least two pages with what would help the providers, and then I think a section on, well, that's actually two pages of it, I guess. So, Mr. Husted, in the short time we have, if you don't mind just at least bringing this to our attention, I think, maybe begin just with some questions, because we can easily enough read this, and I think the first one talks about the expanding limits. I think you just heard a comment from Mr. Johnson, a little bit caution on that. Because this could have a counterproductive effect in terms of shrinking the private market offering if we do this kind of thing. How do you react to that?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that may very well be true. What the issue with the JUA is, they are a source of coverage, they provide access, and they provide a lower rate, so it's more affordable. The salient question here still is, why aren't more insurance companies coming into this market if it is in fact low claims, you know, and so we don't know why they're not doing that. If we had a lot more private insurers offering affordable rates, we'd love to go with them.
Okay. Well, I think that page is sort of self-explanatory, then, unless you have any further comment on that one.
Just that some of our members are now finding the financial institutions are requiring higher limits than the JUA currently offers or is authorized under law. So our bill would expand it to maybe 2 or 3 million per incident rather than 1 million, so that this JUA option could still be a realistic option for our members. That's where our bill is.
Thank you. How about let's quickly cut the next page then?
The second one, tort reform. There's, you know, you kind of go back and forth. Is there evidence that tort reform, placing a cap on non-economic damages, lowers liability insurance rates, or at least the increase in premiums? There, you heard from Bob Johnson some evidence that that's true. You'll hear others that say it isn't. It is one of the few options, though, that we feel, you know, may have an impact on our rates. We don't have a lot of hard evidence that there's a, you know, strong causal relationship, but it's certainly one thing that's been out there and one thing that we would at least like to explore more further.
And I noticed that you have a suggestion here on punitive damages. Would that be
And it really is kind of a transition from that into the next bullet point as well. We had a proposal last session to require 50% of punitive damages be put in a trust fund, and that would cover a certain amount of actual liability for nursing homes. We don't have a lot of punitive damages in the state, so there wouldn't be a real big trust fund, but then we don't have a lot of claims, so maybe that would work. And then finally, you know, state involvement. We're kind of caught between the proverbial rock and a hard place. We can't raise our rates, and yet we are experiencing this tremendous increase. So unless, you know, somebody has to pay either the insurance companies, the trial lawyers, or the state, because the state provides our rates, and, you know, somebody has to pay, and we can't really, we don't know really what's the best combination, but certainly a pass-through cost until something can be done in terms of reform would be very, very helpful to our members.
So that would be in the form, probably, Mr. Husted, of some sort of cost-based supplement to the rates that we have. Is that what you have in mind?
Exactly.
Okay. Any questions, members? Did you have...
John Lips, Care Providers of Minnesota. I just wanted to comment for the benefit of the members.
Please introduce yourself for the tape again.
Yes, John Lips, Care Providers of Minnesota. I just wanted to comment for the members of the committee that in addition to the work that the legislature is doing, this committee and whatever work may come in the future, I just want you to know that we are pursuing other markets as aggressively as we can. And I don't mean only exploring the ideas that Representative Samuelson mentioned about risk retention groups and risk purchasing groups and so on, but Mr. Bates, who was here before, as well as some individuals who are affiliated with the MHHA organization, and no doubt Ms. Harms and others who are in the insurance agency side of this, work constantly and diligently to try and attract other companies to the market. And finally, I just want to comment that the MGUA recently has shared some loss data that it had in its possession with the imperative, which has been very helpful, and it's something that perhaps we'll be able to use to develop the kind of regional interest that you referred to before.
Well, thank you. Unfortunately, we're at a point where we're out of time, and I would certainly offer, if there are if there's anybody else who has any suggestions for the committee, please get those to me. I think we've done a good job probably of laying the problem out, maybe not nearly as good a job of fixing, but I think on the fixing side, if I understand right, having talked to people ahead of time, we're still sort of struggling anyway, and you've at least put on the table some of the thoughts, and I appreciate that. With that, further discussion, meeting is adjourned.